Okay, so Raim Tovim, welcome everybody, Toronto and Harnoff and American, wherever everybody happens to be. A pleasure to welcome everybody to part four of the Torah Motion and Derecheha series on men, women, and ritual, a textual analysis. And today it's a pleasure to welcome Ilana Sover El-Tsufan, who, as you can hear, we know each other from the time Ilana spent in Toronto, going back already 20 years, really. And she taught for even before, I didn't even know if it was called Torah in Motion back then, but Ilana was doing some teaching for us back then. She'd been in Israel for many years, a graduate of Yale University. I believe you are the first graduating class of Yotzot Halakha. If I'm not mistaken, you're from that first graduating class of Yoetzot, and she's a contributing editor to the Yoetzot website, the Nishmat Yoetzot website, and Derecheha, and it's a pleasure. She's going to be giving the next 2 weeks, today and next week, on Tefillin, and then Lori will be after that. So it's really a pleasure to welcome you, and nice to see you, and we look forward to your shiur on Tefillin, men, women, and Tefillin. And let's go.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's nice to be virtually back in Toronto, although I know everyone is everywhere. So I'm going to do a share screen that'll let us look at the sheet together. So we've talked about Shaman, we've talked about Tzitzit, which means that we've really started to raise a lot of the central issues that are going to be the issues in Tefillin. So I think number one is that is to talk about what Tefillin are. So we're going to go very, very quickly through the idea of the four parshiyot, of the four sections of the Torah that are written in the Tefillin, right? In each, the black box on the forehead and the black box on the arm, we have four separate paragraphs from the Torah. Going chronologically, in the order they appear in the Torah, the first two are actually consecutive. In other words, it's from chapter 13 of Shmot, and it's two consecutive parshiyot, but in the Torah itself, they're separated. So it counts as two different parshiyot. And both of them, this is at the end of Parshat Bo. So this is before the Torah is given. This is just after the Jews have left Egypt. And these are the very first mitzvot. Among the very first mitzvot that the Jewish people get are the mitzvah that the Bechor, the firstborn of animals, of people, is holy as a remembrance of the plague of the firstborn, and the mitzvah to remember the Exodus from Egypt and to eat matzah and so on. All of those mitzvahs that are basically connected to remembering the Exodus. And in there, at the end of each of these paragraphs in Shmot, chapter 13, right, we have the commandment of Tefillin. V'haya lecha ra'ot al yadecha, v'zikaron bein einecha, l'man tiyet Torat Hashem b'ficha, ki b'yad chazaka hotziacha Hashem mitzrayim. Right, so that's the first time we have the This is the first time we have the mitzvah of Tefillin, right? And it's very familiar. Ot al yadecha zikaron bein einecha, right? And then again in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Tet Zayin, the second parsha includes the words. I didn't copy down the whole parsha, but just the words that are relevant to Tefillin, right? Again, okay. And the second two parshiyot from Sefer Devarim, everybody knows them because they're part of Shema, right? This is the first paragraph of Shema, includes the words Ukshartam, Ve'ot al yadecha ve'yu totafot bein einecha, and the second paragraph of Shema, the one we call Vayam Shamoa, right? Ukshartem otam le'ot al yadchem ve'yu totafot bein einecha. That's what's in the Tefillin. If you look back, if you think for a moment about the first paragraph of Shema, right, which I'm going to now see if I share a different screen. Oh, let's do it. It has to load up. Okay. Right? This is on Safaria, right? Now we need to get back to 6, right? If we look at Shema, right? So Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that's in the tefillin. V'ha'et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha. You start with the mitzvahs that are really internal. They're in your heart, they're in your mind, right? These words should be al levavecha, on your heart. Then we move into the realm of speech. V'shinantam levanecha, you teach them, you repeat them to your children. You say Kriyat Shema in the morning, in the afternoon. And then we move into the realm of the more physical manifestation of emunah, of our trust and our declaration of belief in Hashem, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right? You bind it for a sign on your hand. So it's attached literally to your body. You're attaching these words to your body, uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha ubisharecha, and you attach them to the door of your house. That's a little more removed. So there's something very remarkable about tefillin that, you know, we move from what's internal, right, in the lave, in your heart, to what's external but still on your body. That's tefillin, and to the mezuzah, which is that what's in your heart, what's in your mouth, you speak, what's external, what's on your body, and what's on your house. And now I'm going to go back to the source sheet. And it's a pretty remarkable thing, right? It's a pretty remarkable mitzvah. It's a very powerful sort of mitzvah. Right? We talked about tzitzit last time. Tzitzit are a garment. They're a special garment. It's a mitzvah to wear it, but they don't have the level of kedusha that tefillin have. And we're going to talk about the kedusha of tefillin a lot more as we get towards the end of this, even of this session and even our next session. But with tefillin, your mamash wearing next to your skin, right? There can't be any chatzitza, anything separating between yourself and the boxes of the tefillin and the straps of the tefillin, right? You're wearing words of Torah, and they include HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, and they include these four very powerful passages of Torah. That's what you're doing. That's what the mitzvah is. And so then, of course, the question arises, you know, are women chayav in this mitzvah? And the Torah doesn't say anything particular about women one way or the other, but the Torah rarely does. The Mishnah in Brachot already says very clearly, Nashim v'avadim uktanim, women and bondsmen and minors, p'turin mikriyat shema umin hatfilin. Right? So, women, right? It goes together with Kriyat Shema. Women are not chayav in tefillin. The Mishnah doesn't explain why. Now, the Tosefta in Kiddushin, and this is also in a Gemara in Kiddushin and other places, right, gives a reason. Ezohi mitzvat aseh shahazman grama. This is a whole category of mitzvot, which we might address in another class, I'm not sure. Mitzvot that are positive, right, things you are supposed to do, not prohibitions, that hazman grama, that are time-bound, right? And those are mitzvot and women are exempt from that category. Now, when you start looking into it, you find out that there are some positive time-bound commandments that women are obligated in, like eating matzah on Pesach, and there's some positive, not time-bound commandments that women are exempt from, like studying Torah. So it's not like a really hard and fast rule, but it's a rule that's very important in a lot of discussions of what women are not obligated to do. So we give an example, Ezohi mitzvat aseshas man grama kagon sukkah v'lulav u'tfilin. Now, sukkah and lulav, it's very obvious they're time connected, right? Because you only sit in the sukkah and you only take the lulav on Sukkot. So obviously, it's a very time-connected mitzvah. But what is the time connection of tefillin? So If you go back for a moment to the next sources and say for Shemot, you see that the Torah talks about Shabbat. It says about Shabbat, et Shabtotai tishmoru ki ot hi beini uveinechem udorotechem, radat ki ani Hashem akadishchem. One of the functions of Shabbat is it's a sign, it raises God consciousness, you know it. We're aware of God. We're aware of God making us holy, sanctifying the Jewish people. We're in a day that's sacred. Every single thing that we do, we have to think of, you know, whether it's permissible to do, whether maybe it's bow rare, maybe whether it's, you know, and we have meals and we make fish. So when we're very, very conscious of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're conscious of God as creating the world, we're conscious of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Shabbat is a special oat. Now, the word oat, as you recall, we saw it repeatedly when we talk about tefillin, right? And so, okay? So we say, Shabbat is an oat. Tefillin are also an oat. And the Gemara in Menachos says, D'tanya, Tatna Brita, Rabbi Wait, is this the one that I want? Yes. Rabbi Akiva Omer Yachol Yaniach Adam Tefillin B'Shabbatot U'V'Yamim Tovim. Are you going to wear tefillin on Shabbat and Yom Tov? Talmud Lamar V'Haya Lo'ot Al Yadecha U'Totafot Ninecha. Mi She'Tzrichin Ot Yatzu Shabbatot V'Yamim Tovim She'Hein Gufan Ot. You need to wear tefillin at a time when you need an ot. The tefillin remind us, right? The tefillin remind us of Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's Shemot Yud-Gimel. The tefillin remind us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he runs the world, right? That's in Dvarim, right? The tefillin remind us of all that stuff. That's why we wear, that's why men wear. That's why tefillin are worn, okay? You don't need that reminder on Shabbat. Shabbat is a good enough reminder, okay? So therefore, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And that already makes them time bound. Now it's different from Shor and Lulav and Sukkah, which are and Kriyat Shema, which are mitzvot that are time bound because you have like a minority of the time in your life that you're supposed to be doing them, right? Like Sukkah and Lulav, you know, you do 1 week out of the whole year, right? Or Kriyat Shema has, you know, a few hours out of every day when it's possible to say. So those feel more time bound, whereas tefillin are 6 days out of most weeks is already Zaman tefillin. So it's most of the time, but since it's not all of the time, right? Since Shabbos and Yom Tov are out, it is already time bound. There is another discussion in the Gemara that suggests maybe they're also the mitzvah also doesn't apply at night. We saw that that's why tzitzit are time-bound, right? Because you don't wear tzitzit at night. And that goes, right, if we saw the first part of tefillin has the words mi yamim yamima. So there's a discussion in the Gemara about whether that might possibly mean it's only during the yamim, only during the days, and not at night. But the conclusion is we don't rule that way. This opinion is brought in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Sham inan leila Rabbi Akiva da amar laila zman tefillin hu. Nighttime is a time when the mitzvah of tefillin applies. Shabbat lav zman tefillin hu. Shabbat is not a time, so it's not tefillin theoretically apply at night. Have you ever seen people wear tefillin at night? You don't wear tefillin at night. Okay, so that's a derabanan. Asur lahaniach tefillin b'layla shem yishkachem v'yishan b'hem. We're going to see in a few minutes that you have to be very, very careful with the way you behave when you're wearing tefillin. And you have to be constantly aware that this is a sacred object that you have, you know, attached to your body. And therefore, sleeping while you're wearing tefillin is very inadvisable. And since people usually sleep at night, as a precaution, lest people fall asleep, because sometimes, you know, you fall asleep without intending to, especially when it's getting late at night, they take your tefillin off at night. Now, what we haven't seen here, what we haven't seen here is any discussion of at what time of day do we wear tefillin. In other words, in general, you see people wearing tefillin during Tefillat Shacharit, right? People put on their tefillin, you know, at the beginning of the morning tefillah, and they take it off at the end of the morning tefillah, and that's when they have their tefillin on. And so that actually goes back. There's a Gemara in Brachot, right? Amar Ula, Kol HaKarei Kriyat Shema Belo Tefillin Ki U Me'id Edut Sheker Ala Ba'atzo, right? Since two out of the three paragraphs of Kriyat Shema specifically mention the mitzvah of tefillin, it would be sort of hypocritical to announce God tells us to wear tefillin and not wear them, right? At least if you are the sort of person who's commanded to wear them, right? So we know that we wear them for Kriyat Shema, and since Kriyat Shema is part of a whole unit that is Tefillat Shacharit, from Birkot HaShachar through the sort of concluding bits, that's when people wear tefillin. But that's not anywhere in the mitzvah. As far as when we start talking about it being time-bound, we're saying it's a mitzvah that applies 6 days a week. Mina Torah, it seems to apply 24-6. Midrabanan, it applies 6 days a week during the day. And in theory, it could really apply all day long. In other words, and there are still some very unusual people who are, you know, big tzaddikim. There are a few people who really wear tefillin all day long, and we'll get to that shortly. So the time-bound aspect of tefillin is that they don't apply on Shabbat. Okay, so far so good. Now, why is it that women are exempt from time-bound positive mitzvot? So I'm not going to get into all of the sort of lofty explanations of it. But the Gemara in Kiddushin presents the principle women are exempt from mitzvot asesha hazman grama, from positive time-bound mitzvot. And it asks the question, how do we know this? How do we know that women are exempt from positive time-bound mitzvot? And you know how we know? Gemar mitfilin. Tfilin are not just a subcategory. They're not just an example of a time-positive mitzvah from which women are exempt. Tfilin are the paradigm. They're like the archetype, the source case for women being exempt. Ma nashim, ma tefillin nashim peturot, af kol mitzvat aseh shazman grama, nashim peturot. Just as women are exempt from tefillin, which is a time-bound positive commandment, women are exempt from all time-bound positive commandments. So how do we know about tefillin? Utefillin gamarla mitalmud Torah. We learn that women are exempt from tefillin because women are exempt from learning Torah. Ma Talmud Torah nashim p'turot, af tefillin nashim p'turot. Just as women are exempt from Talmud Torah, from studying Torah, women are also exempt from tefillin. Now, we could spend the whole evening talking about the exemption from Talmud Torah, which is a major issue and a big, important, serious exemption. But I'm just going to give you quickly the source for that on a technical level and not get into everything behind it. Okay? Again, going back to the second paragraph of Shema, it says, V'limadtem otam et b'neichem ledaber bam. That's the mitzvah to teach your children Torah. It's also the source for the mitzvah to learn Torah. And the Sifrei, which is the authoritative Midrash Halacha, says, V'limadtem otam et b'neichem v'lo b'noteichem. Sometimes banim or b'neichem just means your children, sons and daughters. But here, the authoritative tradition of the Torah Shabbat is that technically women are exempt from the mitzvah of Torah study. Now, that doesn't mean that women shouldn't study Torah. Women should study Torah. There are probably a lot of ways in which it is, in fact, a mitzvah and an obligation for women to study Torah, even though not directly through the technical obligation of Talmud Torah. Okay, so please continue studying Torah. Don't worry about it. But technically, when we say we have a specific mitzvah that's one of the 613 called learning Torah, that is actually a mitzvah that women are exempt. Women can certainly do it voluntarily. And that's kind of our source. That comes from the word b'neichem. And from there, we connect to tefillin. And from tefillin, we connect to the whole category of all positive time-bound mitzvot. Now, how is it that we connect tefillin to Talmud Torah? Well, tefillin and Talmud Torah both appear in the first two paragraphs of Shema, right? V'shinantan levanecha v'dibarta bam b'shivtecha b'veitecha v'lechtecha v'aderech u'v'shochtecha u'v'kumecha u'kshartam le'ot al yadecha, right, for example, from the first paragraph of Shema. Also in the second paragraph of Shema, we have both. However, the Gemara presents an alternative. V'nakish tefillin u'mezuzah. How do we know that we should connect tefillin to Talmud Torah? Maybe we should connect tefillin to mezuzah. Sfaria, right? Because it says right here we have... Good, yep. Right? Vishinantam levanecha v'dibartabam, that's Talmud Torah. Nope, that's not what I want. Then we have ukshartam wa'ot al yadecha, that's tefillin. And then we have uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha uvish arecha. So which way should we go with tefillin? Right? Should we go up? Right? Should we go previously? Right? Tefillin is in verse 8. So verse 7 is Talmud Torah and verse 9 is mezuzah, right? Now, are women obligated to put a mezuzah on their door? If you, absolutely, right? If you have a household that's all women or one woman or whatever, she absolutely has an obligation to put a mezuzah on her door. It's exactly the same, whether it's a man or a woman. It is a positive mitzvah with no time-bound element, right? There is no time of day or night or week or year when you do not have to have a mezuzah on your house, on your door. So maybe we should connect tefillin to mezuzah. So the Gemara goes on and says, tefillin with Talmud Torah, eat kish, Bain b'parasha rishona, bain b'parasha shnia. Right? Tefillin is, the discussion of tefillin is immediately adjacent to the mitzvah of learning Torah, both in the first paragraph, v'ahavta, and in the second paragraph, v'haya im shamoa. Tefillin v'mezuzah b'parasha shnia. Oh, and it's also adjacent to mezuzah in both of them. Sorry. Tefillin, right? But tefillin is adjacent to mezuzah only in the first paragraph, right? We saw in the first paragraph of Shema, it goes Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah, tefillin, mezuzah. So it comes right in between the two of them. If we look at the next part of Shema, which is V'haya im Shamoa, it goes like this, right? V'samtem etz dvarai eila al avavchem v'al nafshachem u'kshartem otam li'ot al yedchem v'ayu totafot bein einechem. That is tefillin. V'limatzem otam b'nechem l'daberbam, right? That is Talmud Torah. And then we have uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha uvisharecha. That's mezuzah. So in the second paragraph of Shema, in the paragraph Vayayim Shemoa, tefillin are not adjacent to mezuzah, right? Tefillin are not, right? Therefore, we come to the conclusion that tefillin are more connected to Talmud Torah than they are to mezuzah. And therefore, instead of learning from the mitzvah of mezuzah that says, that applies to everybody, that tefillin, which are very similar to mezuzah, right? You have a case and you have the parchment inside, right? It seems like a mitzvah that's actually very, very analogous to mezuzah. And since women have to have a mezuzah, it would make sense that women should also need to wear tefillin, because they're really two mitzvot that are incredibly similar, right? You would say these are like two twin mitzvot, right? You write out certain parshiot, you put them in a case, and either you attach them to your door or you wear them as a sign on your body. It would make a lot of sense for them to be connected. But we say no. If we look at the order of the parshas, we see that tefillin are right next to Talmud Torah in Ve'ahavta, and they're right next to Talmud Torah in V'hayayim Shamoa, whereas in V'hayayim Shamoa, they're not right next to mezuzah. So therefore, we're going to make that connection, that hekesh between the two psukim, and we're going to learn as follows. Women are exempt from learning Torah, okay? Therefore, women are exempt from tefillin, which is very closely linked to learning Torah in two places that it appears, two places that the mitzvah of tefillin appears. It's very closely linked to learning Torah. Tefillin is a mitzvah that is positive and time-bound. Therefore, we conclude that all mitzvot that are positive and time-bound, women are exempt from. With some exceptions, because rules are never really 100% rules, but we have a general principle. And we derive that principle from tefillin. So tefillin aren't just an example of a positive time-bound mitzvah from which women are exempt. Tefillin are the test case. Tefillin are like the main reason why. Tefillin are the reason why women are exempt from all positive time-bound mitzvot, at least in terms of sort of technical textual derivations. Now, there's a mechelta, which is similar to and different from that Gemara. Look at this mechelta, right? It says, V'lefi she'ne'amar v'ha'elech ha'lo'ot, I think I need to do. Okay. V'lefi she'ne'amar v'ha'elech ha'lo'ot, shomei ani af anashim b'mashma. It's supposed to be an oat. Tefillin are supposed to be a sign. Everybody needs signs, right? Everybody needs a munah. Everybody needs to be reminded. Everybody needs to know that God runs the world. Everybody needs to know that God took us out of Mitzrayim, right? Shomea aniya fanashim b'mashma. I would think that this also applies to women. Logical, yeah. V'hadin notein, and that's also logical. Ho'il u'mezuzah mitzvat asei u'tfilin mitzvat asei, right? Tefillin and mezuzah are both positive commandments. Im lamadta al mezuzah shinoheget benashim ka'anashim, right? And we know that mezuzah is a mitzvah that applies equally to women and to men. Yachol af tefillin yinhagu benashim ka'anashim. Same thing should apply to tefillin, right? That would be a very logical derivation, right? A, an oat is an important thing. It ought to apply to everybody. B, we know that mezuzah applies to everybody, and it makes sense for tefillin to be similar to mezuzah. Talmud Lomar, we learn, Leman tiyeh Torat Hashem beficha. Now that goes back to the first parsha of tefillin, okay? the one in Sefer, the one of the ones from Sefer Shmot, from Parshat Bo. V'ayalecha lo'ot al yadecha u'zikaron b'inecha l'man tia Torat Hashem b'ficha. That's another reference to Talmud Torah, right? So we have the reference to Talmud Torah in V'ahavta. We have the reference in V'hayayim Shamoa, both of which are adjacent to Tefillin. And now we have another reference in Shmot Yud Gimel and Parshat Bo. Where is this? Here. Lo amarti ela b'mi shehu chayav b'talmud Torah. That teaches us that God commanded this only to people who are obligated in the formal mitzvah of Torah study. Right? That's why it says you have to have the tefillin, l'ma'an tiyeh Torat Hashem b'ficha. It applies to people who are supposed to have the Torah in their mouths. The people who are supposed to be learning Torah, doing the formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's a mitzvah from which women are exempt because of the derivation of b'neichem, your sons, and not b'notichem, not your daughters. Okay. Mikan amru hakol chayavin b'tfilin chutz minashim v'avadim. And therefore we derive that women and bondsmen have the same Canaanite bond, not non-Jewish bondsmen, are sort of semi-Jewish, and they're obligated in tefillin on the same level as women. Okay, meaning not obligated. They're obligated in mitzvot on the same level. Okay. So far we've seen that women are exempt. We've seen that women are exempt because tefillin is in the category of a positive time-bound commandment. We've seen that it's not just in that category, but it's really the paradigm for that category. And another reason why women are exempt from tefillin is because tefillin are so closely connected to Talmud Torah. And that makes sense too, because Talmud Torah has to do with our connection to the words of Torah, and tefillin are kind of literally a connection to words of Torah. You have words of Torah that are on your forehead or on your arm, right? That's okay. So it makes sense to say tefillin are a mitzvah that's closely connected to Talmud Torah, both textually in 3 out of the 4 parshiot, and conceptually in the idea that we have a deep, strong connection to the words of Torah. So therefore, women are exempt. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that women are exempt. Nashim v'avadim p'turim v'tfilim v'pnei shehi mitzvat aseh shezman grama. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch doesn't go into all the details, but that's the basic rule. Okay. So far, women are exempt. Now, women are exempt from a lot of mitzvahs. Women are exempt from hearing shofar. Do women hear shofar? Yes, women hear shofar all the time, right? Women are exempt from sitting in the sukkah. Do women sit in the sukkah? Absolutely, all the time. The most Haredi women, right? Do women take lulav? Yes. Right? So there are many mitzvot, aseh, shazman, grama, that women certainly do. Two weeks ago, we talked about tzitzit, which women don't do so much in Orthodox circles. But the question is, can women voluntarily do the mitzvah of tefillin? So on one level, on level number one, can a woman voluntarily perform a mitzvah from which she is exempt? The answer is yes, right? In general, the category of mitzvot from which women are exempt, women can perform some of those mitzvot. How about tefillin? Well, the Gemara, and this is a pretty well-known Gemara, and those of you who are doing Daf Yomi, which does not include me, will remember it from not that long ago. D'Tanya is a discussion in Eruvin about sort of rescuing tefillin that are found in an open space outside an Eruv on Shabbat. And you can't obviously carry them to a safe place, but maybe you can wear them to a safe place. And maybe women also could, and it gets into a whole very long discussion about tefillin and Shabbat and other things, which we're not going to enter here. But then it tells us a story, gives us an example. D'Tanya, so Braita teaches us, Michal bat Kushi. Now Kushi is another name for Shaul HaMelech. There is a pasuk in, I forgot where, maybe Mishlei, I forgot where the pasuk is. There's another pasuk somewhere which seems to refer to Shaul HaMelech by the name Cushi. Can you give me less water? So Michal Bat Cushi is understood to be Michal, the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, the daughter of King Saul, right, who was married to David HaMelech, right? Haita Manachat Tfilin. That's a pretty impressive thing to hear. Okay. Michal, the queen, she was a princess, she was a queen, right? She was a very important Jewish person. She was presumably very righteous, right? She used to wear tefillin. Velo michu ba chachamim. And the chachamim, the sages, the rabbis of that time, did not rebuke her. In other words, they didn't say, Michal, what are you doing? This is the wrong thing. You're a woman. Don't wear tefillin. That didn't happen, tells us the Gemara, right? She wore tefillin, and as far as anyone could tell, was fine with everybody. And now we have another story. V'ishto shel Yonah, the wife of Yonah Hanavi. Now, this is a person who I don't think we've heard of before anywhere, right? Did anybody ever wonder if Yonah, you know, the one who went, who was swallowed by the fish and so on? He was married. Did you know that? He was married. Not only that, his wife, Haita Ola Regel, which is pretty cool because they lived in Malchut Yisrael. Okay, so she used to go to Yerushalayim for the three festivals. V'lo michu ba chachamim. And again, the sages did not criticize her, even though the mitzvah of going to Yerushalayim for the festivals is called zechorcha, all of your males. Women are not commanded to do it. But she did it voluntarily, and nobody rebuked her. And who knows, maybe she even went on her own when Yonah was off, you know, on boats going to Jaffa and Nineveh and stuff. Okay. Midelo michu b'chachamim kasavar reshut. So it seems that she went, that Yonah's wife went voluntarily. It was a reshut. It was optional. She took the option to do it. She wasn't obligated. She didn't have a chova. But she did it because she felt like she wanted to voluntarily. Hachanami Rashut, here also by Michal, she did it voluntarily. In other words, there was a discussion in the Gemara, maybe women are obligated in tefillin. That was an idea, a suggestion that came up in the Gemara. Sort of a problematic suggestion because it goes against the clear Mishnah that we already saw at the beginning, right? That clear Mishnah in Brachot. But the idea was raised, and we say, no, Michal did, in fact, wear tefillin, but she was not obligated to do so. She did it voluntarily. She voluntarily chose to wear tefillin. Okay, great. And now we have a really great source that says women can wear tefillin, because we saw Michal wore tefillin, and the sages didn't say anything negative to her. Super. Okay, now let's look at the Yerushalmi. So there's a parallel discussion in the Yerushalmi. Hare Michal bat Shaul, hayta loveshet tefillin, eshet Yonah hayta ola l'regel, v'lo michu biyadam chachamim. Okay, so far the Yerushalmi has just said exactly the same thing that the Bavli says, right? The Jerusalem Talmud just said exactly the same thing as the Babylonian Talmud. Michal put on tefillin, Yonah's wife went up to Jerusalem for the pilgrimage festivals, and it didn't bother anybody. But we have another opinion. Rabbi Chizkiah b'shem Rabbi Abahu, ishto shel Yonah, he shava. Yonah's wife went back. She set out to do a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, but she didn't go all the way there. She changed her mind. She did tshuva, and she went back. She didn't do that mitzvah, which apparently was inappropriate for her to do because she was a woman. Michal bat Shaul, michu b'chachamim. And Michal, the sages did rebuke. So we have a machloket Bavli and Yerushalmi. We have a dispute between the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud says that the sages had no problem with Michal's behavior, with her wearing tefillin, with voluntarily. And the Jerusalem Talmud says they did have a problem. So usually our halacha goes according to the Babylonian Talmud. So good. So it seems like, based on the Talmudic discussion, it should be okay for women to voluntarily put on tefillin. There's also a mechilta, which doesn't even raise the prospect of there being a problem. Michal bat Cushi haitam anachat tefillin. ishto shel Yona hayta olah l'ragalim, tavi avdo shel Rabban Gamliel haya meniach tefillin. Right? Here are three examples of people who do things from which they're exempt. In addition to Michal and Yona's wife, which we already knew about, we also have Rabban Gamliel had a bondsman named Tavi, who we know is a very learned person, even though he had the status of a bondsman. And he also put on tefillin. Just as women are exempt, bondsmen are exempt. So here we have two examples of people who are patur, people who are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin, putting on tefillin, and the Mechilta doesn't even say, did anybody rebuke them? Didn't anybody rebuke them? Just tells us that's what they did. This Mechilta, by the way, is just a continuation of the one that we saw before explaining that women are exempt. Okay. So that's Chazal. That's the Gemara, the mission of the Gemara, the Medrash, right? Women are exempt from tefillin. And it seems, according to most opinions, they would be allowed to wear them voluntarily, but the Yerushalmi says no. Okay, that's where we're holding now. Let's start looking at Rishonim, right? This is medieval authority, so Sefer HaChinuch. I think now we're up to the 13th century. Okay. And this is the Sefer HaChinuch goes through all the mitzvahs and it gives us all the rules very clear. Right, and it says that this mitzvah applies bizcharim avalo b'nekevot l'fi shehi mitzvah taseh shezman grama. Okay, it applies to males, not to females, because it's a positive time-bound mitzvah. U'mikol makom imratzu lehaniach ein memachin biyadam u'schar yesh lehem. If women want to wear tefillin, what does Sefer HaChinuch say? Fine, great. We don't rebuke them. They get schar. Okay, don't stop here. Okay, there's going to be like a lot more halachic sources. But at this stage, right, fine. Okay, they get schar. Aval lo schar ki ish ha'eno domet schar ha'metzuvah v'oseh k'schar she'eno metzuvah v'oseh. Right? They get, a woman gets less reward because she's doing it voluntarily. You get more reward when you're doing something that you're forced to do, perhaps because then you have much more of a yitzer hara, an inclination not to do it. That's a general principle, not specific to tefillin. And he brings the example of Michal Bat Kushi, who had put on tefillin, and the sages did not rebuke her. They did not protest. Okay. Rashba, about the same time, right? V'hiskamti k'divrei mi she'omer she'im ratzu la'asvosot kol mitzvat aseh u'mevarchot. Women can not only voluntarily do positive time-bound commandments from which they're exempt, but they can also make a bracha, asher kidashan b'mitzvot avitivanu. How do we know this? Mima'aseh d'michal bat sha'ul she'hayta manachat tefillin. Michal bat sha'ul is like an example of why women are allowed to voluntarily do mitzvot from which we are exempt, right? Dulo michu biyada ela, right? Ela keratzon chachamim avda. Not a, presumably what she did was viewed favorably by the sages. They said, wow, you're a righteous person, right? You didn't have to do this mitzvah, but you're doing it. Great, kol hakavod, right? Keratzon chachamim. And presumably one who does the mitzvah makes the bracha. Okay. So we have seen two Rishonim, very serious Rishonim, not like people fight, dug up in a hole somewhere, right? That say, yes, women can absolutely put on tefillin, no problem. We even have, this is a somewhat more obscure source, but Rav Avigdor Tzarfati, who is also, I think, from the 13th century or thereabouts, right, says, Nahagu miktzat nashim sadkaniyot lehaniach tefillin ulevarech. That at least there were in some communities somewhere women in the Middle Ages who actually put on tefillin. We don't know how many. We don't know how widespread this was. We don't know who they were. all of the stories about Rashi's daughters do not have any evidence one way or the other, which isn't that surprising because why would there be evidence? Even if they did put on tefillin, there probably wouldn't be evidence, but in fact, there is no textual record of it at all. It's sort of one of these things that people say, an urban legend maybe, I don't know. But anyway, there was such a thing as women putting on tefillin on some scale. And we can see that a number of Rishonim seem to have treated women and tefillin in the same way that they would treat women and lulav or sukkah or shofar or any other positive commandment. No, you don't have to do it, but if you want to do it, gesunta heit, go ahead, it's fine, no problem. Okay. Now we're going to take a step backwards from women, and we're going to talk about another aspect of tefillin in general, which is the incredible level of kedusha that's involved in doing this mitzvah. This is like a fairly intimidating mitzvah. Where else is there an example of a person who wears an item of apparel that has God's name on it? Well, one example is the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, right? One of the eight special garments of the high priest was called the tzitz, which was a kind of a gold plate that said Kodesh LaHashem, right? It had God's name written out on it, engraved on it. And the Kohen Gadol, when he was doing the service in the Beit HaMikdash, he had to be constantly aware that there on his forehead was the tzitz with God's name on it. And the Gemara in Menachot compares tefillin that everybody, or all men at least, should be wearing with the tzitz that only the Kohen Gadol wears. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Chayav Adam L'mashmesh B'tefillin B'kol Sha'ah. A person wearing tefillin has to like always sort of feel them, always, you know, make sure they're there, make sure they're in the right place, maintain constant awareness. Kal v'chomer mitzitz. This is a kal v'chomer, an a fortiori argument, means even more so than the tzitz. Umat tzitz she'ein ba'ela azkara achat. The tzitz has a total of two words on it, and one of those words is God's name, okay? But it only has God's name once. Amra Torah v'haya'al mitzchot tamid. It needs to be on his forehead always. What does the Torah mean by always? So we have we expound that verse to say, Shelo tasiach da'ato mimeni. He shouldn't remove his mind from it. He shouldn't take his mind off of the tzitz. He should be constantly aware. Here I am with this thing on my forehead that says, Kodesh Lashem. That's the Kohen Gadol, like the holiest person in the world, okay? Tefillin, which everybody wears, or at least all men, sheyesh behen azkarot harbeh. An ordinary person wears tefillin on their forehead and on their arm that don't say God's name once. They say God's name a lot of times. I mean, I didn't go through these four parshas and count how many times God's name is in there, but a lot of times, okay? Al achat kama v'kama, all the more so. Say, wait a second, when you're wearing tefillin, it's not stam, it's not, and when you're wearing tzitzit, tzitzit are just a garment. You don't have to think all the time about the fact that you're wearing tzitzit. Right? You don't have to think all the time about the fact that you're wearing a kippah. But you have to think, you can never totally take your mind off the fact that you're wearing tefillin. Because tefillin have God's name in them. They're very, very holy. Now, what does it mean you don't have to take your mind, you can't take your mind off it? So it doesn't mean that the whole time you're walking around with tefillin, you can think of nothing but the tefillin. If you recall, we said that originally, the basic mitzvah is to wear tefillin all day. As you put your tefillin on in the morning and you wear them all day until it gets dark. And presumably you go about doing various things. Now, there are still some people who do that. And all of those people that I'm aware of, Rav Scheinberg Zatzal did that. Rav Scheinberg Zatzal used to wear tefillin all the time. But he was in yeshiva all the time. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. There's a cheder that I've seen in Yerushalayim where I've occasionally seen it in the old city. So sometimes when we've gone to like to that part of the old city, I see the teachers walking around in the middle of the day with their tefillin. But again, they're involved in teaching Torah all day. But, you know, if you're a shoemaker or an accountant or whatever, you also apparently can wear tefillin all day. And this is based on what Rabbeinu Yonah explained, right? Devadai hesech hadat lo havi elek she'omed bakahut rosh uvishok. Taking your mind off it means really frivolity, silliness, joking, right? That's really taking your mind off tefillin. You can't be wearing tefillin and like joking around and partying around. Aval kesheomed biyira umitasek bitzrachav. But if you're serious and you're involved in your needs, you're doing your job, right? Afal pisha osek omnuto, right? Even though you're doing your job, uvitzrachav, and you're doing the stuff you need to do, you're doing housework, you're whatever it is. Ve'ein da'ato alehem mamash, and you're not thinking about your tefillin for the 12 hours a day or the 8 hours a day that you're wearing them. Not saying, oh, I'm wearing tefillin, I'm wearing tefillin, I'm wearing tefillin. You're thinking about all the other stuff you need to think about. Lo nikra zeh hesech hadat. That's not hesech hadat. So that's a little bit reassuring, okay? In other words, when you're wearing tefillin, you have to be aware of them to the point that you're not going to be silly and frivolous and out of control. But as long as you're serious and you have an appropriate frame of mind for a person wearing a very, very holy item on their body, then you can go about your normal business wearing tefillin. Now I want to look at a Gemara in Shabbat. This is a famous Gemara, okay? Amar Rabbi Yonai, tefillin tzrichin guf naki. Okay, guf naki means a clean body, and it is a concept that we're going to talk about a lot next week. We're just going to introduce it now. Who's the example of a guf naki? A person named Elisha Baal Knafaim. You need to have a guf naki, a clean body, just like this person, Elisha Baal Knafaim. What does that mean? Abai says, shelo yafiach bahen. You're not allowed to pass gas when you're wearing them. Rava says, shelo yishan behen, you're not allowed to sleep while you're wearing them. Because you have to keep track that, you know, your any bodily functions that might be not on the sort of highest level of purity and cleanliness and so on are not happening when you're wearing tefillin. But amai kari le baal knafayim. So why did they call this person Elisha Baal Knafayim? So there's a story. The Romans were persecuting people. They said, we don't want to see anybody with tefillin. Anybody we catch wearing tefillin, we're going to poke his brains out. And yet, there were apparently people who still chose to wear tefillin, and not just in shul, like out in the market. Elisha Baal Knafayim actually went out, you'd say, he put on tefillin and went out to the market. He was out in the street. And a Roman questor, which I guess is some kind of officer or official, saw him and ran after him. And Elisha ran away. And the questor caught up with him. And Elisha quickly took off his tefillin and was holding them in his hand. And the questor said, what's that in your hand? And Elisha said, dove's wings, wings of a dove. And he opened his hand, and there miraculously were the wings of a dove. And he was not punished by the Romans. Okay, so apparently his great care to make sure that he was always properly conscious and maintained a high level of cleanliness and purity physically and mentally while wearing the tefillin meant that he merited a great miracle. And Rav Yonai says, everybody should be on that level. Now, does that mean everybody really has to be on that high level all the time? Maybe, maybe not. That's an interesting question. Rabbeinu Hananel suggests, well, at a time when you need miracles, you should be on that level. But like regular, you know, times in history when you don't need miracles, you could be like a little old. Whatever. Okay. Now, Maharam is going to be a source where we're going to start to see people really suggesting that not everybody should wear tefillin under all circumstances. And he uses the example of bachurim, of young men who have a lot of trouble controlling their thoughts and they're thinking Hir Horim, they're having sexual thoughts, even when they're supposed to be davening. And he says, if you have a young man who cannot control his thoughts to the point that even when he's supposed to be reciting Shema, he cannot control those thoughts, he shouldn't be wearing tefillin. Guf naki doesn't just mean your body has to be clean, it means your mind has to be reasonably clean. And if your mind is going to be going in places where that are totally inappropriate for tefillin, don't wear tefillin, right? He says, and he almost says a kal v'chomer, right? He says, for example, somebody who has intestinal problems and problems with continence can't wear tefillin because of physical, he might soil himself, right? Such a person should not wear tefillin. All the more so, somebody who cannot avoid frivolity of thinking inappropriately about women or thinking inappropriately about sex. So that's already, we're starting to see people saying, we have to be very, very, very careful about tefillin, and we have to have our thoughts, not just that our thoughts have to be reasonably serious. We said, you know, our thoughts obviously have to be reasonably serious. Our thoughts certainly shouldn't be going in the direction of inappropriate fantasies. And if they are, don't wear tefillin. Don't do this Torah commandment, this mitzvah, the semin haTorah, because if you can't keep your brain in the right place, you can't wear tefillin. And the Ramah says, v'im e efshar lo below Hir Horim, mutav shelo lahanicham. If you can't keep your mind free of sexual thoughts, it's better not to wear tefillin, even though it's a positive Torah mitzvah. Okay, there are a few more sources that we are going to do next week. We're going to start to talk about the implications of this. What we've seen so far is that women are exempt from tefillin, A, because it's a positive time-bound commandment, and B, because it's connected to Talmud Torah, so it's sort of the paradigm of positive time-bound commandments. We saw some sources that imply that it's in the category of positive time-bound commandments that women can voluntarily perform. And now we've started to look, irrespective of women, at some of the sources that are telling us scary about how serious this mitzvah is and how much we have to focus on it and how our mind has to really be in the right place. And if we can't keep our thoughts properly focused and away from inappropriate thoughts, better not to wear tefillin. In other words, that's a pretty serious statement. To make a statement, you should avoid doing a positive commandment, a positive mitzvah from the Torah. If you can't control your thoughts, these thoughts, keeping your thoughts in the right place is very important. What we're going to talk about next week is what this thinking about guf naki, what are its implications for men wearing tefillin? And then we're going to go back and look at what are the implications for women wearing tefillin. And we're going to look also at what various rabbinic authorities from, you know, the Middle Ages onward to today have said about women wearing tefillin. So let's see, were there any, if there are 13 things in the chat. Okay, weren't Rashi's daughters said to have worn tefillin? They are said to have worn tefillin, but we do not know what the source of that is. It is a thing that is said, and we don't know if it's true or not. I have no sources. If anybody has seen a source on that, let me know. You should probably start winding up to leave time for questions. Okay. Lusting in your heart would be a problem. Now I go up and I find other things. Is exempt different from forbidden? Yes, exempt means you don't have to, but possibly you could. We discussed that. It is also not at night. That's right. We saw that that seems to be a rabbinic prohibition. In other words, theoretically, you could wear them at night, but we don't wear them at night because you might fall asleep. And then you would have trouble, say, making sure that you don't pass gas because you would be asleep. Isn't the difference between Heftza and Gavra? Ooh, that's like a very lamdish question, but what exactly are you referring to? Like where... So I'm not quite sure where that's from, Chaya Passau. If you want to explain, it's okay with me. women in Talmud Torah seems to be very arbitrary. It's hard to tell where this comes from. In other words, a lot of times, and we discussed this, this is in Derakeha's article on women in Talmud Torah. It seems like this isn't just a reading of a pasuk, but that there is apparently a tradition that is backed up by this way of reading the pasuk, that it's b'neichem, that learning Torah is, at least in the sense of a formal obligation of something that you need to do every day, is traditionally understood as being something that applies only to men. It is troubling.
Okay.
And it presumably comes somewhere from the beyond the pasuk. You are invited, I'll try to get into it another time, but you are invited to read the Derakeha article on the topic. It wasn't that long ago that it was strange not done for a woman to do mitzvah lulav. That's right. Depending on what community you're in. It's certainly, I think it was normal for women to, you know, take lulav at home, but for women to bring the lulav to shul in an Orthodox shul in Achinami, that's true. It has become much more accepted even relatively recently, Baruch Hashem, but I don't think there's been a lot of question about whether it's you know, okay. It just, you know, whether it's something that women do. Okay, I think... Here's another few things. How do we distinguish between mitzvot that women are p'turot? Okay, so mitzvot like tefillin and tzitzit, Lori talked about last time. There seems to be a big issue of yora, given that it is something that is not normally accepted for women to do. It looks like sort of spiritually showing off. Spiritual show off, you are to wear tzitzit when you're not obligated to do it. That I think was the strongest argument against tzitzit, which is why sort of the conclusion last week was that if a woman wants to wear tzitzit under her clothes and nobody knows about it, she's probably fine. But there's a sense that for you to this is for men to do it and to do certain mitzvot in an unusual way would be inappropriate for women to do a mitzvah that is unusual for her. In the case of tzitzit, would be an issue. Tefillin, why would it be a problem? That is the topic of next week's class. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I'm Chaya Pass, so I'm the one who asked the question about the chefs and the gavra. It was connected to the mitzvah of mezuzah. And I was wondering if the difference for a woman is based on that fact in terms of mezuzah rather than, does anybody say that? Because there, the mitzvah is on the chefza, on the house, that it has to have a mezuzah rather than on the person who performs the mitzvah, no?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think also a person has to have a mezuzah on the house that they live in. The very simple explanation why women and men are equal in terms of mezuzah is that there's no time-bound element for mezuzah, right? Except for Talmud Torah, which is a very big exception. But most of the mitzvot from which women are exempt are in the category of mitzvot aseh shezman grama. Mezuzah clearly is not in that category. So I think that's a more straightforward explanation than chefta v'gavra. But yeah, you could, I'm not gonna say off the top of my head if you could do chefta gavra with that one, maybe you could, I don't know. It's a interesting idea, and I'm happy to think about it, but I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to turn it back to Jay.
No, okay, thank you very much. You could also say by what the Gemara says, of course, on mezuzah, that l'man yirbu yimechem v'mei b'neichem, it says, you have a long life, and women need long life, just like men need long life, which is what the Gemara says, why women have to daven, just like men.
Right.
Prayer is mercy for God, and women need mercy just like men. Anyway, thank you very much. Good, you handled all the questions, I think, and we look forward to learning with you next week. Thank you very much, and enjoy. Tonight, Dr. Moshe Sokolow continues his weekly series on the Haftorah of the Week. Everybody's invited. That's at 8 p.m., 8 p.m. this evening. And tomorrow night at 8:30 p.m., Rabbi Bram Weinberg from Silver Spring, Maryland, will be giving our rotating weekly Parsha Shiur that Ilana would like to attend, she told me, but she says 3:30 in the morning is a little bit of a rough time for her. So we excuse all people who live in Israel. But if you don't live in Israel, excuses don't hold water so well. Okay, but whenever you can make it, it's a pleasure. Baruch Hashem, there's lots of learning going on, and you hope you can join us as often as you can, and we look forward to learning with you. And thank you, Ilana, for really a very nice broad overview of the sources of Tefillin from, like we say, from the sources, and like all the subjects, they're much more complex. Unfortunately, in modern times, sometimes the discussion is not focused on the halakhic issues, gets focused on issues that are really less important, more inflammatory, and more controversial. And it's nice to learn the sources as they are from a Torah perspective and leaving aside some of the other stuff that comes along with it. I hope I said that correctly and properly. I hope you agree. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful day. We look forward to seeing you in a few